Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. And we are joined now by Lizette Jacobson and Maurice McDavid. Lizette and Maurice are both school principals at West Chicago Elementary Schools. And in addition to being educators, they also co-host a podcast called Black, Brown, and Bilingue. Lizette and Maurice come from different backgrounds, but they're dedicated to unifying the Black and Latino communities through the conversations on their show. They were inspired by the book by Dr. Nicholas Vaca called The Presumed Alliance, The Unspoken Conflict Between Latinos and Blacks and What It Means for America. On their podcast, they discuss everything from social justice education to interracial and interethnic marriages to hip-hop and how it's used in education. Maurice and Lizette, thanks so much for being with me today on the 21st.
Thank you so much for having us. It is a pleasure to be here with you.
Maurice, I'm going to begin with you. You and Lizette both currently work together in the same school district as school principals. The first episode of the podcast is called A Brother and a Latina Walk into a School. Can you talk about how you met?
Yeah, so Lizette and I met actually just about 10 years ago now or so, and we were both coming in as first-year teachers in the DeKalb School District, you know, Lizette will tell the story that she's like, who is this brother and why is he so loud? Because I was comfortable. I was born and raised in DeKalb, so knew everybody there. Lizette was coming in, and it was our new teacher's orientation. That's where we originally met, but I would say really our friendship probably deepened more so during our master's program at NIU there in DeKalb starting in 2015.
Lizette, what's your version of the origin story there?
Yeah, so we would often, actually, when we first walked into our first class, we quickly realized we were the only Maurice was the only Black male. I was the only Latina in the room. So I think that naturally we looked at each other and we're like, yeah, we're probably going to partner up on these assignments. And we found ourselves talking at great lengths to after school or after classes, and we'd be really fired up talking about race, ethnicity, social justice. And at one point, I remember we were at Graham Hall, like out in the parking lot, and we're like, we should really record this. And fast forward to the pandemic, and we suddenly found ourselves with a little bit of time because we were at home. And so we're like, this is the time. If we are going to start something like this, this is the time.
Yeah, but before we get into the podcast and how that came about, can you talk a little bit about what was it like being in that orientation where you felt like one of the only people of color in that room?
Yeah, I think for me, having again been born and raised there, you know, I think coming out of college, my mind was set. I was going to go to Chicago and I was going to be this hero teacher. They were going to make a movie about me, right? And
Stand and Deliver too.
Exactly, right? Or the Joe Clark story, Lean on Me, right? But I think I realized I did not know the city of Chicago. What I did know was DeKalb, right? I knew what it was like to have grown up there. And so I came back to DeKalb on purpose. I think I was very much so aware that I may be the only person in the room, but I think I was wanting to take on that responsibility and being able to be a positive representation of Black men. And I know certainly I don't feel the need to speak for all Black men, but at least they were going to have an interaction. My students were going to have an interaction with a Black male so that they could say to any stereotype, well, no, that's just not true. You know, my eighth grade teacher was, he was dope. So that was certainly part of it for me.
And seeing for me, it was completely opposite. Maurice and I quickly realized that we grew up in very different environments. I grew up in Waukegan, and it is a very diverse community. And so, you know, being in DeKalb for a new teacher orientation was a bit of a culture shock. I had no intention of teaching in DeKalb, but I quickly realized that there was a growing Latino population, and there weren't a lot of teachers who looked like me. And so that really drew me to staying in DeKalb, because you know, like Maurice said earlier, wanting to go to Chicago to be the superhero teacher. I wanted to go to Waukegan to be the superhero teacher, but diversity and representation is beneficial for everyone. And so I noticed that there was a real need for that in DeKalb. And so ultimately I decided to stay.
Okay, so let's then talk now. You mentioned you were having these conversations and you think we should record these someday. That's a big leap though. You got to buy the equipment. You got to figure out how to edit audio and all that sort of thing. So talk a little bit about taking your conversations into a more formalized, you know, podcast format.
Well, we realized that we had a unique dynamic. We are podcast listeners and there really isn't anything out there that or a lot out there that has a Black male and a Latina talking about these issues. And so that right there, we knew would be intriguing. And then I think, honestly, Maurice, I can't even remember. It just was like, let's go on Amazon, buy some good microphones and let's talk.
I will say this just kind of in passing. I had, as a teacher, started writing and recording rap songs. And so I had known how to edit the sound. And I think it's funny because Lisette actually does all the editing for our episodes, because the first episode that I edited, I knew at least, you know, what technology we could use and all those things. But the first episode I edited and posted, we had some overlap on the sound. And so she was like, no, you got to take it down. And but I think that I bring that up just because that offered a level of comfort with using the editing technology from just the fun songs that I've made for my students and still make. So
yeah,
and they're
yeah,
very fun, I will say.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just saying that the songs are great. They're a lot of fun, and I know that Maurice gets called back to perform.
I would say he said he's mentioning that in passing, but we're definitely going to come back to that. but Maurice, let me stay on this question of podcasts and the uniqueness of what you both are doing here. Maurice, were there other podcasts you were listening to where you were hearing perspectives from educators of color? Or, I mean, is this really a niche that you and Lizette are filling?
So there were a few. I've kind of upped my Twitter game probably as I moved into leadership. And in doing that, I found that there were a few out there and I was listening to those. You know, since we're on NPR, I got to throw out, of course, Code Switch.
Code Switch.
Was definitely one that I listened to on a regular basis that, you know, would take time and address these. But there was, another one, and I'm blanking on the name right now. I'll be able to find it here in just a second. But definitely some out there that I think I found some inspiration from, definitely.
And Lizette, same question to you. Was there anything else you were listening to that was inspiring you in this direction? Or did you feel like, well, no, I'm not hearing anything. That's why we got to get out there.
Well, yeah. Honestly, a lot of the podcasts that I listened to were like Oprah, Super Soul Sunday, and the Michelle Obama podcast. So there really wasn't anything that I think spoke to me as a Latina. So yeah. I'm of the mentality that, you know, we hear we want a seat at the table. And for me, not only do I want a seat at the table, but I want to be at the head of the table. So I might as well create something for other people like me.
Okay, let me take a moment. Go ahead, Maurice, go ahead.
I was just going to jump back in. It's Leading Equity by a friend of mine, colleague of mine, a Twitter friend, I should say. I've never met him face-to-face, but we do communicate, Dr. Sheldon L. Eakins, and just a great podcast.
But even those don't have the male, female, Black male, Latina dynamic that Maurice and I bring. So we feel like it's something special.
Yeah. And if you want to hear that something special, Black, Brown, and Bilingue is the podcast. Let me just take a moment to reintroduce my guests. They are Maurice McDavid and Lizette Jacobson. They are the co-creators of that podcast, and they are both principals in elementary schools in West Chicago. And Maurice, I want to ask you a little bit. You mentioned earlier about, you know, your idea of becoming a hero teacher in Chicago. And you mentioned in the podcast that you had not had your first African-American male teacher until you were 21 years old. Can you talk about how you think that affected you and what role that played in your decision to get into being an educator?
Yeah, absolutely. I had already, at that point, that was my junior year in college, I had already declared that I was going to be an ed major. We had gone to see the movie Freedom Riders, and that kind of was very inspirational for me. But I did find myself that junior year, I was taking an American history class, and that's what I ended up teaching in middle school. Love American history. But I found myself just really enraptured by this class and could not figure out why I so looked forward to going to it Monday, Wednesdays, Fridays. And then all of a sudden in reflection, it hit me that for the first time I saw somebody who looked like me at the front of the classroom. And it was a man by the name of Professor Conrad Hamilton. He was half Black, half Japanese. And he shared a story with the class that I remember vividly. He talked about how his parents needed to go to another state in order to be married because of anti-miscegenation laws that were still in effect in the state in which he was born. And so, you know, I think for me, that was something I always carried with me into the classroom. And I think I still carry it with me now as a building leader. I am just very aware that students are looking for a positive reflection of self. And so I think about it in the way I dress. I think about it in the way that I speak, both professionally and quote unquote unprofessionally, right? I'm willing to get down with the kids and you know, communicate with that language, because that is the language that is my first language, right? It definitely is something that I reflect upon and hope to be able to be that for somebody. And working in elementary school, I know that these kids are going to get to see a Black male educator before 21. So I think that's beautiful.
Yeah. Lizette, similar question to you. I mean, did you have teachers who were Latina when you were coming up?
I did not. But I do feel very fortunate that my very first teacher was a Black woman. And throughout my K-12 experience, I had other Black educators that certainly had a huge impact on my life. But something that I think for me was more impactful was that none of my teachers spoke my language. And in fact, you know, I was that student at parent-teacher conferences who had to translate because my parents still do not speak English. And I remember feeling a deep sense of shame. And it was in those moments that I wanted to keep my home identity as far away from the school setting as possible. And so I felt like I was navigating two separate worlds. And I want to point out that my teachers didn't necessarily say anything negative about the fact that I was translating, but they didn't affirm that side of me. And it was very challenging. And it wasn't until I got to high school where I was like, okay, you know, I'm going to go to school to be an educator and really pursue this so that other kids who look like me and speak other languages don't have to experience what I experienced.
And Lizette, you even mentioned in one of the episodes that asking your older sister to pretend to be your parent in parent-teacher conferences so you didn't have to translate. But you are now a bilingual educator. So when did you begin to embrace bilingualism?
I feel very fortunate that I had a phenomenal cooperating teacher, Abby Madere, who really showed me that bilingual education had come such a long way. So when my siblings were growing up, bilingual education was really viewed as remediation. And that's where you were put for like up until third grade, and then you were to be fully immersed into an English speaking classroom. So I'll be honest, I originally had no desire to go into bilingual education because I saw what that was like for my siblings growing up. So eventually when I got a placement for a bilingual classroom, I realized that my bilingualism was truly an asset. And so I had a great mentor and my cooperating teacher, and just being able to connect to the families in that way was something that I feel so blessed. I had parents, you know, crying or thanking me, like you would see the relief immediately once they knew that you spoke Spanish. And so to be able to engage them in the education of their children, it was just so rewarding. And so I knew at that point that this is exactly what I needed to be doing.
And just, we need to take a break in about a minute here, but maybe briefly you can talk about the difference in when you and your siblings were children to now, in terms of, you know, I think the term is even, what, English language learners as opposed to mm-hmm. bilingual education. Maybe you can just talk about, you know, sort of how the system has changed in its approach to that.
I think we finally have realized the value of being a multilingual learner. Before it was seen as, you know, it was a direct correlation on your intelligence, where now we know that it is enrichment. And if you are able to speak more than one language, I mean, there are so many benefits to that. And I don't think that that was the case when my siblings were growing up. I think they felt inferior. I think they were made to feel separate. And so now seeing, you know, the growth in dual language programs, and for people to understand that if you go to a lot of affluent communities, parents are literally banging on the door saying, we want a dual language program, because they're understanding the value. And it's unfortunate that it took for these more affluent communities to demand dual language program for others to see the value. But, you know, nonetheless, it is definitely elevated in status.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with Lizette Jacobson and Maurice McDavid. They're both elementary school principals in West Chicago, and they are the co-hosts of the podcast Black, Brown, and Bilingue. We're going to continue this conversation after a break. The podcast is about, it's about a lot of things, but one of the main ideas behind it is bridging the divide between Black and Latino communities. We're going to get into that after a break. If you want to join our conversation, if you have a perspective on this or a question about this, the number is 800-222-9455. We're going to open the phone lines after we come back from this break. 800-222-9455. You're listening to The 21st. More to come in just a moment. Stay with us. This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are speaking for the rest of the hour today with Maurice McDavid and Lizette Jacobson. They are the co-hosts of the Black, Brown, and Bilingue podcast. They're also both elementary school principals in West Chicago, Illinois. And if you want to join our conversation, if you have a question about education today, 800-222-9455. And specifically, if you want to have a question or comment about this idea of bridging the divide between Black and Latino communities, 800-222-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455. Of course, you can always tweet us at 21st Show. So, Maurice, I want to get into this idea of the Black and Brown divide. What are your thoughts on that division? Do you have examples of this from your life, your childhood, or your life in general?
Yeah, I don't know that it was something that I had thought a lot about prior to probably grad school and some of the conversations that Lisette and I had. And she always mentioned the book, The Presumed Alliance by Nicholas Vaca. You know, I can look back, though, as we started talking about it, I can look back and hear some of the comments that were made by my family about the Latino community. And I, you know, looking back, obviously hindsight is 2020, they say, right? You can see where there definitely was that impact. But I also, you know, I think even more so in my work as an educator, I think unfortunately I have still seen it at different times amongst different groups of kids. You know, that there is still this division. I think on a larger scale, though, one of the things that happens is that due to some of the historical systems of oppression that we're still working to be able to dismantle, when you talk about jobs and you talk about the impact of economy and competition for certain jobs, I think that those resources are something that have created kind of this division, even though, again, like Nicholas Vaca said, there is this presumption that, well, but you both have experienced oppression at different points in history. Shouldn't you be on the same team? And so I think we're attempting to bring us to the same team.
And Lizette, go ahead.
Yeah, I think another large component to that is media coverage. So, you know, we just looking at this past presidential election, there was very little conversation on how Latinos helped flip Arizona. And, you know, we had the same thing happen in Georgia with the Black community. And, you know, while that was important and great, you know, just the way that the media covers our issues is extremely slanted. You know, it's as if we continue to live in a Black and white world. And again, that's not a slight to the Black community. I think part of the discussion that Maurice and I are having is how can we come together to help elevate one another? Because we want to be very mindful that this doesn't turn into the oppression Olympics, you know, who has suffered more and who is, you know, still suffering more. We don't want to do that. But I think that there's a lot that can be gained by having these conversations and uniting in a sense so that we can see the changes that we want to see.
And Lizette, can you talk a little bit more about The Presumed Alliance, the book by Nicholas Vaca that seems like it's been so inspirational or animating in the conversations you have with Maurice on the podcast? You know, briefly, I realize it's hard to summarize a book briefly, but you know, you're in an elevator, you got 30 seconds to tell someone about it. What is idea there?
So it was a book that I actually read as a senior in high school. And without giving too much away, for season two, Maurice and I actually were able to interview the author. And he expressed to us that he received a lot of pushback when he wrote the book, but he felt like it was an important one because it is the elephant in the room that no one wants to talk about. But what I loved most about the book was how he spoke to, you know, when white people interact with Black folks, they're bringing a sense of guilt that Latinos just don't have. They don't have that understanding of, you know, historical events. And so it is just a very different experience. So if I could say like one plug is to read it with an open mind, because it definitely is the elephant in the room that I think a lot of us are not willing to talk about.
And Maurice, I wonder if you can talk a little bit about where the division in the book comes from, right? What are the roots of that from your perspective?
Yeah, I think, again, you know, a lot of the roots come from two things that we've already mentioned that I think, though, are worth repeating are the economic competition. And so I think particularly as you see the Latino community continuing to grow and certainly outpacing the growth of the Black community, I think there was this sense of being overwhelmed, right? And Nicholas Vaca talks about that a little bit. I think the second piece that Lisette mentioned is the media coverage. And I thought about this idea of how, you know, and I think obviously we're here today, right? And so the media is doing a much better job than perhaps it has done in the past. But there was a point in which in the news, if you were talking about Latinos, you were talking about immigration. And if you're talking about Black people, you were talking about either crime or entertainment, right? And so I think with that perspective, if our perspectives are only being shaped by what we see of one another in the news, that then there is this sense that you've come here illegally to take my job. And there's this sense that you've been here and you are, you know, living a life of crime. And so I think that there is that piece of division that comes from that. I would add, though, you know, as well, just some of the, in terms of building power structures, right? The author, Mr. Vaca, talks about the power structure that exists in Black communities and how it had been built up and how they had worked in the government and all those things. And then Latinos were coming into those populations or into those cities and looking for to be able to build some of that same power. And so I think, again, the one of the things that causes the division is the idea that nobody else can gain power without me having to lose power. And that's not true, right? And I think that's one of our themes, is that we want to be able to show that you can, that everybody can be empowered in a community.
Yeah, it's not a zero sum competition necessarily.
Yeah, there's definitely enough pie to go around.
Right. You know, I also want to ask about, since the recent shootings at spas in Atlanta where 6 Asian women were killed, there have been calls for allyship between Black Americans and Asian Americans. And Maurice, I wonder if you have a perspective on how Black and Latina and Asian communities can be there for each other and provide allyship to each other, you know, or is it sort of a mistake to say, you know, we're smoothing out too many differences to, you know, sort of lump, you know, those groups together? What is your perspective on that?
So my first response, and I saw this actually on a TikTok, and I thought it was pretty fitting, was a white man shoots Asian women, and the media's response was Black people need to show allyship. And my thought was just, wait a second. There's a responsibility that needs to be taken for this continued this repetition of white violence towards communities of color. And so absolutely, I think that allyship is something that comes out of it, but I also think that we recognize we still live in a society where, you know, like it or not, a majority of our politicians are still white. A majority of our power brokers economically are still white. And so I think there's allyship that needs to come from there. And so I understand that it's kind of, you know, after the summer of 2020 and kind of that response. And I believe wholeheartedly that, yes, we need to stand against all violence and particularly racially motivated violence. But I just wonder if there's some responsibility too, where you know, we can ask our white brothers and sisters to look inward into their own community and say, wow, what do I need to do about this? How can I step up? How can I be a part of stopping this and not push it off onto, again, some of these presumed alliances.
Lizette, do you have a perspective on that?
I would just add that, you know, just like Maurice said, that conversation takes away from the real issue. The fact of the matter is that we had a white male who murdered these people. So, you know, yes, definitely, I think that there is that allyship there, but again, let's focus on the real issue.
Okay, we have only about 4 minutes left in our show today, so I want to sort of conclude our conversation by asking how you are bringing, you know, the fight against racism and for racial tolerance into classrooms in the schools at which you are principals. And Lizette, I'm going to begin with you with that question.
Sure. So one of the ways that we are doing that is by making sure that we are elevating the status of languages other than English, I should say. Recently, I was able to interview the author of a book called Proudly Bilingual. And I wish I would have read that book as a child. And so we bought copies for every single classroom. We have it displayed in our bookcases. So that's just one of the ways. We also, outside of just our own buildings, we are providing professional development on how to elevate other languages. So we really feel like we are just now beginning to put, it's not just story, there's also action.
And Maurice?
Yeah, we, again, very, very excited about the professional development that we're beginning to work on. We also are both involved in some other projects and have some opportunities to you know, do some of that work again in and out of our building. Recently provided a professional development for the Regional Office of Education in DuPage County on the culturally responsive teaching and leading standards that were just passed through the state of Illinois. And so
Maurice helped write.
Yes, thank you. I was gonna leave that off, but I appreciate that. Yeah, got to be a part of writing those through the Diverse and Learner Ready Teacher Network. You know, I think specific to my building, like a small, simple thing, I engage in conversations with my teachers regularly throughout our staff meetings about that inward reflection on personal bias, right? About some of the work of an educational researcher by the name of John Hattie, who says, you know, your ability to, or if your belief in your students' ability to learn and grow is one of the biggest determining factors. And so really challenging our teachers to say, we cannot, you know, have the pobrecito mentality, or, you know, which is, you know, the poor little baby mentality. We get it. Our students are coming, and particularly in our district, they are coming with struggles and difficulties and some different family situations. But our job is to make sure they learn and make sure that they're being prepared to have that long-term success. And so just some of those small things, engaging in, again, that biased conversation is one that's really important.
Well, if you like what you have heard today, you can find more of it on the Black, Brown, and Bilingue podcast. It's available on Apple Podcasts. Just search for that. We'll also have a link to it on our own website, 21stshow.org. My guests have been Maurice McDavid and Lizette Jacobson. They are co-hosts of the Black, Brown, and Bilingue podcast, and they're both principals at elementary schools in West Chicago. Maurice and Lizette, thanks so much for the conversation today.
Muchas gracias.
Adios.
All right. And that is all the time we have for the 21st today. Before we go, I do want to suggest you listen to our own podcast. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, NPR One. Just search for the 21st. That way you'll never miss an episode. Our program is produced by Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Chantal Vaca is our engagement producer. Our interns are Zainab Qureshi and Brielle Skullark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Talk to you again tomorrow.